Jeff here. Thanks for listening. Go to playvolutionhq.com/ccbag or click the link in the show notes for the show's archives, ways to connect, ways to support the show, information about happy hour, and more. Podcast, the world's longest running and most prolific early learning podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson, and coming to you from the snuggery, upstairs studio in the snuggery along the Gulf of Mexico. With me, Nicole Halton, coming to you live from the suburban paradise of Newcastle, New South Wales, Australia. Are you technically on the Gold Coast?
No, nowhere near.
No, there. That nor that's
no. The Gold Coast is in Queensland, so about 8 hours north of
yeah.
There.
So that's Brisbane-y.
Yes, right? Just south of Brisbane is the Gold Coast.
If you're driving, you're halfway to the Gold Coast. If you're driving from not even close to halfway. If you're driving from Sydney, you're a tenth of the way to the Gold Coast. If you're driving from Sydney, but it's a nice drive up the coast. Next time you're in the Australia,
call in and say hi.
Fucking Australia should be paying us for your Australia tourism. Should
like
be
tourism, yeah.
I mean, just think about how many people listen to this podcast and decide, fuck it all, I'm going to go to Australia because they listen to you on this podcast.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think they probably do.
Yeah. Hey, Australia.
And perhaps I need to get a commission.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's Australia. Tourism should be advertising with us. That's all I got to say about that. So another thing happened at the it happened near the beach. I actually sometimes go places that aren't the beach.
Are you sure?
I mean, I was within, okay, this happened within 300 yards of the beach, but it was not at the beach. Okay. I'm popping to the shop the other day, and I noticed walking down the sidewalk. This is a nice suburban street. Walking down the sidewalk in front of me is a little girl. Young toddler, 20 months old or so, carrying a big plastic purple sand bucket, like as you would bring to the beach. And she's walking along with some dude. I'm assuming it was her daddy. They seem to have that out for a walk with dad vibe about them. And she's got this bucket, and she would take a couple steps, and then she would stop and crouch down and look at something and pick it up and look at it some more and then either throw it or put it in her bucket to bring apparently home with her. And then she'd take a couple more steps and bend down and pick something else up and pick it up and look at it again and decide if it was bucket worthy. And this was how they were making their way down the sidewalk. And I popped to the shop and come back, and it's probably 20 or 30 minutes later, and they'd made it maybe a quarter of a block further down the sidewalk. And she's just toddling along with this bucket that's about half the size of her. And I got all misty. I had an allergy attack because I was having fond memories of taking similar walks with my kids and the family childcare kids and the center kids back in the day, because I think kids get going for walks. This isn't all about again, it's about the process. And a lot of that process involves stopping and picking things up and looking at them. And it's often nice to have a bucket. You ever do any bucket walks?
Maybe not a bucket walk, but it's funny. I actually wrote a blog post about this a couple of years ago. It could be even like 6-7 years ago now on our website. And it was We used to, oh, and I still do, walk my kids to and from the bus stop, and it's about 350 meters from home, and so we walk down, and now we've got the dog, we walk the dog and we walk back, and they're all much bigger and the walking is a lot quicker. But when my youngest was, that same sort of age, and some days I'd think, oh, I don't really want to walk to the bus stop because I know it'll take an eternity to walk home. And I felt like I was often hurrying her home, like it was, especially because it's uphill, the walk home's uphill. And so I felt like I was kind of like coaxing her along and hurrying her along. And I'd read a quote, and I actually just saw it yesterday when I was reviewing a training session. And it was about living in the nowscape, I think is the quote or the phrase. And there's like a whole bunch of things around it. I'd have to find it, look it up. But the idea is that children live in right now. They're not worried about what's happening next. They're worried about what's happening right now. And right now, I'm picking things up and I'm inspecting them and putting them in my bucket or throwing them away or whatever. And that's where their focus is. Whereas for us as adults, it's, I need to get home. I need to put a load of washing on. I need to do this thing. Like, there's all kind of the stuff that's happening ahead. And so I kind of made a conscious choice on this particular day. I'm like, I am just going to go completely at her pace on the walk home. And so, like, the 350 meter walk home, I think took us the best part of an hour because we just literally stopped and looked at like snails, and we looked at a little mushroom, and we looked at, the flowers in someone's garden, and all of those kinds of things. But I just kept saying to myself, you're not rushing her, you're in the now, and we will get home when we get home. And it is that kind of thing that I'm much like you and so soft when it comes to those sorts of things. I see that now, and like you, I don't know, you just think, oh, I remember doing that when they were that age. I watched my, almost 14-year-old walk from the car off to his tennis lesson yesterday afternoon, and I think I had an allergy attack. And I just had that feeling of like, it doesn't feel like that long ago that, like you were this little toddler who wouldn't have been off walking on your own because I'd have been right there beside you and we'd have stopped and looked at the, the ducks and whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like they're not doing that and you're not there with them doing that. And it's just nice to see that. It is, it's really nice.
Yeah, I wanted to go up and give this dude a good dad. Good dad, pat in the back, because I was just glad to see that. Because I mean, look, it's we're living in a rushed world, and seeing somebody be slow
Present.
and moving at the speed of that toddler was it was kind of precious to see. So
That is precious.
glad that's happening in the world. Also glad it wasn't my toddler, because that would just it was just slow my rule. No, yeah. So we're continuing our look. Hey, we're not gonna three episodes in a row together in our actual series. So we're actually over half done with our sensory system series. We're getting to the vestibular system, which is I think it's the
No,
I
we're not.
enjoy, aren't we?
Are
No,
we
we're
talking
getting
about
into proprioceptive. We're
the
getting into the
proprioceptive
proprioceptive
system?
system.
Don't do that to
Oh,
me.
well, fuck me.
You just practiced saying proprioceptive
I
just before
did.
we started.
We're getting into the proprioceptive system. So what is the proprioceptive system?
Well, it's I find it one of those hard things to explain. It's like the awareness of your body and the orientation and position of your body within space. That's kind of
Yeah.
the broad explanation.
Yeah, as well as your body's your the position of your body in space, the awareness of where your body parts are in relation to each other in space, and also things like pressure on your body. So
Yeah, regulation
the
of
amount of
force and
pressure that's being put on joints, grip pressure, those kind of things. And so it's closely tied to the vestibular system and the tactile system. But I think one of my favorites. Look, interoceptive, absolutely my favorite. But
we're
I kind of
ranking the sensory systems
I
now.
yeah, because everybody cares what Jeff's rankings on the sensory systems are. I'll come up with my top eight list of
yeah, or, that's right.
Which one is your favorite?
It's probably what would be mine's tactile, and that's just because I'm a very tactile person. Like I don't like wearing clothes that don't feel nice, and if I'm walking past things in the shop, I like to touch them. And you know, like it's even like if I was in the same room as you right now, I'd find it really hard not to like rub the top of your head, because like when you have a shaved head, it feels really nice. It's a real tactile thing. So yeah, mine would be tactile.
Well, I'm glad we're not in the room together. That would be very uncomfortable
awkward.
for me. So, this system is again, it's probably one that doesn't get a lot of attention, but it's really important because just our body awareness and our physiological functionality are really dependent on this system being hardwired with the brain. One of the big things that we can do in early learning settings to support the development of the proprioceptive system is make sure kids have lots of opportunity for heavy work, which is activity that involves pushing or pulling or carrying. And so again, like we've said with so many of these others, it's wiring this sensory system. We need to be up and moving and active in the world. And so there's that.
There's that. Yeah, the heavy work thing's a huge part of it, you know, and a lot of times children don't get opportunities for heavy work because we often, you know, we'll think that there's too much risk associated with some of those things, like lifting things and moving things, you know, and that's where loose parts, I love how loose parts feeds the sensory systems, but, you know, like that ability to have different types of loose parts and things of different weights and, you know, sizes, and that children can actually move. But it requires educators to be okay with children moving things around. And that's another thing too, you know, like we talk about pushing and pulling things around, or, you know, lifting and carrying and whatever. But often you'll get educators say, oh, no, that stays there. That needs to stay there. We don't move those things from there. And so it can be a kind of a mindset thing, I suppose, to shift that so that it's like, well, actually, if they are moving all of those, I don't know, tires from over there and they're taking them over there, that's okay. And that's actually good for them. There's a benefit to that. You know, it might look like there's no purpose. You know, often people go, what's the point? Why are they taking them over there? But the point might be that they need that kind of sensory regulation.
Yeah. Yeah. And since wiring the system involves lots of big body stuff, that tends to be activity that we kind of shy away from, and because it's risky or dangerous or whatever we want to say it is. And the reality is that kids are wired for this kind of activity, and preventing it is actually doing them a bigger disservice than service.
Yeah, and often people will put a stop to things like rough and tumble play or whatever. And a lot of the reason given to that is, well, you know, they're too rough, they're pushing too hard, or they don't know their own strength, or, you know, they're using too much force with things, or, you know, but if they're not given the opportunity to regulate that, you know, and to actually test out what it feels like to use different levels of force and to move their bodies in different ways, then they're not going to develop that. You know, it's kind of like we want it to be developed to be able to do the rough and tumble play safely, yet we need the opportunity to do the rough and tumble play to develop that kind of proprioception that then makes that safer. Does that make sense? It's like that whole kind of chicken or the egg thing.
Yeah, yeah. Another piece of this is this goes back to social emotional too, because those that feeling of tension on the body and putting pressure on your, you know, that sensory awareness ties to our emotional state. So one, a lot of proprioceptive related activity allows for emotional release, but also simple things like feeling that pressure on our joints can actually have a calming effect on kids. This is why some kids do better with weighted blankets, those kind of things. That's kind of a sensory, but also proprioceptive response. And so if we've got kids that have a hard time emotionally regulating, self-calming, those kind of things, allowing environments where there's more proprioceptive activity is one way to benefit those children, but also reduce quote unquote behavior problems.
Absolutely. And it's interesting when you said that, my mind instantly went to Temple Grandin and the cow squeezing machine that she created. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Okay. Oh. So she is an autistic woman who basically, yes, you know who I'm talking about. So she basically invented for herself something to help regulate her emotions. And it was what she called like a squeezing machine or a hugging machine or something. And it was essentially something that she would put her body in and it squeezed her body and mm-hmm. gave her that calming regulation, et cetera. She ended up taking that and inventing a similar thing for cows who were being sent to the slaughter. And what it did was it calmed the cows before they got to that point, because what happened was when the cows were panicked, they knew what was happening. When they were panicked, there was more injuries. They lost cows because, you know, they hurt themselves and they couldn't then use them or whatever. And so she invented this thing and it meant that the cows went through and were calm. And so it reduced the stress on the cows in the lead up to the slaughter. So while that's a really negative thing, I don't like to think about it.
That's not a negative thing. That makes delicious steaks and hamburgers. There's nothing negative about that.
But it's just, for me, it's that real highlight of, you know, that emotional and sensory regulation, you know, like it's that perfect example of that. She identified that in herself and then went, mm-hmm. well, how can I utilize that? Now, I'm not saying we need like children squeezing machines, but if we have things like, even in my service that I used to run, we had hammocks outside in the trees and they were like hammock chairs and hammock swings and whatever. Mm-hmm. And children could actually get in them and kind of be like in and firmly. It's hard to, we've said last time, we're glad this isn't a visual medium. Right now it might be helpful if it was, but, you know, like children would kind of envelop themselves in these hammocks and get that physical contact and pressure. And it was calming, you know, it really did calm some of those children down. There were lots of other things we did. We did rough and tumble play and whatever. But I just think, you know, having ways for children to have that physical pressure is that sensory input that a lot of those children really need.
Yeah. Another thing, hugs, actual hugs are probably a good thing as well. Actually, hey, this isn't too much information. Tasha actually calls me the hugging machine. Yeah. No, that's not true. Not true. I just, yeah.
Gosh, I wish it was.
It would be personal if it was true. No, I just made that up. I mean, look, I can give a good hug if I need to, but there's no machine about it. It's all very human.
Right.
Another thing about the proprioceptive system, and this harkens back to the last time we were together and we were talking about the visual system. It turns out that our proprioceptive awareness is developing proprioceptive awareness is easier with the parts of our bodies we can actually see. So being able to regulate things like grip strength is pretty easy because we can see our hands. And now I'm going to delve into more talk about squats because look, listeners, I know you don't give a fuck about Jeff's doing squats, but this actually ties in here too, because to do a proper low bar squat to make it an official squat. And look, a lot of people are out there doing squats that aren't really squats because they're not deep enough for it to be a real squat. No, stick with me here. For it to be a real, because people don't go deep enough. You need to get to a point where your knees are slightly, your hip crease when you're squatting down is slightly lower than the top of your knees. That's a below parallel squat. And
that's a long way, isn't it?
That's a long way. And most people that do squats aren't going as deep as they should to get
I don't think I go that deep.
To get the full range of motion of that squat. And so part of that is you need to be aware of where your hips and butt are when you're doing this motion. And so, but because most of us can't see our butts, one of the training methods for doing that is, to get some tactile feedback is you use you get a cardboard box or something similar. That's the height you need to get to. And so when you squat down and you feel yourself come in contact with that box, then you know you've gone deep enough. And then over time, that tactile sense, that tactile response, the proprioceptive system responds to that. And then you learn how to get that depth without that prop.
That's very impressive.
No, I mean, it's not. It's stupid and weird, but it's
cool.
It's the way our bodies work. And so I thought my squats were deep enough for a while. And then about 6 months ago, I realized they weren't. And so I had to go through this whole thing of rewiring my proprioceptive system so that I could get that depth that I wanted, so I wasn't cheating on my squats. That's probably more squat talk than anybody thought they were going to get in this episode, or maybe they're so used to it by now they were expecting it. They're kind of listeners like, hey boy, it doesn't say anything about it in the episode description, but I hope Jeff talks about squats again today.
It'll be squats and dog chat. It's usually dog chat too.
Yeah. So there's that, but that awareness and so kids are, look, kids are out when they're allowed to be out and moving and engaging in the things kids like to do, which is running and jumping and climbing and spinning and flipping and moving their bodies and in interesting and odd and unpredictable ways. They're actually building these systems, but also the opportunity to use different types of grip and, you know, carrying heavy things, that heavy work. You have to use carrying a egg requires a different amount of grip pressure than carrying a brick. And all of that is those different experiences are wiring that proprioceptive sense in a different way. One of the problems some kids have in rough and tumble play is they grab the other kid too hard. They use too much grip strength when they grab them. And so learning to regulate that grip as part of the proprioceptive system when they're rough and tumbling is one of the ways that we can help kids help everybody keep their play face on when they're engaged in rough and tumble play and other activities.
And I think it's highlighting that for children, helping them to see that it's that. It's not that, you know, Timmy grabbed you so hard because he hates you. Or Timmy, don't grab so hard. That's rough. You know, it's like, let's not put that judgment around it. Let's go, oh, when you grab hold of someone's arm, if you squeeze too hard, you know, that's going to hurt. And let's try squeezing some other things. And like, I don't know, pick up a pool noodle or something and squeeze that. And what's it feel like? And what's it feel like when you squeeze a tree branch? Or like just those kinds of things to get children aware of it. Because I think that is it. It's often that lack of experience and lack of awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and it all filters down to school readiness things because learning to write, you need to hold your pencil with a certain amount of pressure to be able to hold the, you don't want to be holding it too tight, but you can't hold it too loose or it falls out of your hand. And that's proprioceptive awareness that is helping you with that activity. And so things like climbing, going across the monkey bars on the playground or climbing a tree, knowing how tightly to grip the branch you're going to be grabbing, for example, is all part of this system at work. Yes. And then feeling the pressure on your joints when you're lifting things or running and, you know, propelling yourself off the ground, the feeling in your knee joints and your hip joints as you're moving yourself through space is all part of proprioceptive awareness.
It's just movement. Like, so much of it is just movement and freedom to move. You know, children need lots of space to move. And, you know, often we see it all the time that our environments for children are very cluttered, both indoors and outdoors. They can be really cluttered. You know, indoor environments often kind of sectioned up and there's nowhere for any kind of movement. You know, you're expected to sit down and play with a thing. And then you go outdoors and, you know, some outdoor environments are so filled with things that there's not that space for someone to spin around in circles or to roll down a hill or to, you know, lay with their arms stretched out or to, you know, like just that freedom of movement and to be able to just move in random, whatever ways they need to do. If that means that they're rolling across the floor, you know, if someone's inside and they're rolling across the floor and you go, hey, this isn't a real safe place for them to roll, find a place they can roll across the floor, because obviously they need to do that. You know, it's like that space to move, but freedom to move as well is just so important.
Yeah, because, I mean, kids are wired to, they're wired for activities that wire all eight of these sensory systems we've been talking about. And it turns out that activities that support the wiring of some of those systems, the proprioceptive system is one of them, are looked at as crimes in a lot of early learning settings. Because to wire the proprioceptive system and the vestibular system and the interoceptive system and many of the others, kids need to be doing that big body stuff that gets them put in time out and labeled as the bad kid in a lot of classrooms. And so supporting this development isn't always about doing more or providing lessons or any of that kind of stuff. It can really be about not saying no to the stuff that you're saying no to.
Yeah, it's changing our attitudes to it, you know, and going, taking a step back and going, okay, so this child is spinning around in circles, that's not necessarily a problem. If they've got a space to do that, and, you know, what's the problem? I can step back and just watch them do that. It's like, I've seen it where educators are like, oh, they just keep spinning around in circles. They need to go and find something to do, you know, and they'll often say that. They need to find something to do. Stop rolling around on the floor and go and find something to do. And it's like, I'm pretty sure they're already doing the thing. Yeah. Like, and
stop okay. doing something and find, stop doing something and go do something.
Do something that I'd rather you do, you know, yeah. Like something that I can tick a box, you know, and I think that comes back to a lot of it is that educators find it so easy to observe the child who is, you know, sitting and cutting out a picture or whatever, and they can observe that and document the skills that they've achieved and, you know, all those kinds of things. The child who's spinning around in circles outside on the grass, they don't know what to do with that. You know, it's like, oh, what could I possibly say about that? What's their interest? What's their, you know, and it's because of that lack of awareness around the sensory systems, you know. And I think once you recognize that, it's like, hey, that's what this child's doing. They're actually, you know, working on their proprioceptive sense. They're working on their vestibular sense. They're, you know, exploring this, they're exploring that. That in itself should be enough. You know, it doesn't need to be go and do something because you are already doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So for a lot of those activities, I guess the big thing caregivers can do is put on their sensory system goggles and see a lot of these activities that they may be inclined to say no to through a sensory systems lens, maybe makes it a little bit easier to say yes to those things. Or or to convince outsiders,
that this is a purposeful use of children's time.
parents and administrators and coworkers that it's a worthy endeavor, I guess. Should bring this one in for a landing.
Yes. Oh, before we do, I need to quickly shout out to my Australian friend, Robin, who sent me an email and listens to the show and loves it and likes to hear a fellow Australian accent. So it's all been worth it.
Robin, Nicole let me know. She got a nice email from me and everything. And that's great. But what about my American accent?
It's not the same.
Yeah, apparently not. Okay, look, Jeff's not feeling the love from Robin, but that's okay.
I am.
I'll be okay. I mean, other people like me sometimes, Robin. Anyway, Robin, glad you're listening, although you don't like my American accent. It's okay, because Robin,
she didn't expressly say that she didn't, but I think it was just that she liked to hear. I don't even know if she actually said it Australian accent. It was the Australian perspective, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, it was a winner. I was happy. So
Robin, thanks for listening. Hey, this has been the Child Care Barn Girl podcast, the world's longest running and most prolific early learning podcast that will take an opportunity to narrowcast to specific listeners now and again, like Robin and listener Pam. Listener Pam, you see, we didn't talk about poop at all this episode. Thanks for listening. Back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.